This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Dan, Sat, and Randeep.
It is the People's Show. Randeep and Vic with you. Sat and Dan are off celebrating New Year's Eve. New Year's Day tomorrow, I assume, as well. But they will be back next week. So you're hanging with me and Vic until 7 o'clock, where we're going to get out there and probably do some New Year's-related stuff, too. Okay, what does...
Dan Riccio out here, you're saying celebrating, and he's posting pictures of him driving by Swiss Chalet.
And Harvey's.
And Harvey's. Is that really celebrating, or is that just Riccio, like, reliving his past glories?
Okay, so that's my point here, and this is what I want to say. Riccio's a studio gangsta. If you're all about that life about Harvey's and Swiss Chalet, go in there and take a picture and actually go there. He's just driving by, Vic. I'm calling him out on this. Who drives by and takes a picture? Get in there.
Dan
Order
Riccio.
Some food,
Dan
man.
Riccio. Dan Riccio, that is awesome. Studio gangsta.
He's a studio gangsta.
The streets aren't meant for you, Dan.
Dan, get in that Swiss Chalet, order a half chicken or whatever you get, and then take a picture. Don't take a picture from across the street.
And you went all bunk from the wire on him. It's like, hey, man, we had a rough neighborhood, but people took care of me. You don't belong here, young fella.
If you were in studio with me, Bick, you would have seen that. You know that the look that Bunk gives in that scene as well?
Oh, yeah.
The walk away? I had that look on my face when I saw that picture. Absolutely. Don't worry. Bick and I will be giving it to Dan next week as well. We'll give him the gears in person next week as he returns to the People's Show. Looking forward to that, and it will be there's some changes, obviously, with the Canucks' schedule. That game against the Islanders that was scheduled to go January 5th has been postponed. Some attendance restrictions issues are being cited. Obviously, in Canada, there are restrictions in place, 50%. So, therefore, you know, from a monetary aspect, it's not favorable to the business. It's not favorable to the league right now to go ahead with these games for teams that are revenue generators in Canada. So if you have that luxury at this point in time, or if you have that option, I should say, in February to, you know, kick the can down the road and hopefully the situation's better where maybe those restrictions are eased, Vic, you got to take that. As a business person and as a league, you have to maybe play for that option.
No, for sure. And this got brought up last night of because the report came out yesterday by Elliot Friedman that there could be changes. And look, I don't have as big of a deal with it as maybe some other people do. Because I was kind of talking about it in the sense of even the business side of it is one thing. The league is obviously going to prioritize profits and how to maximize revenues, and that's all fine. But don't people want to see Canucks games in a full building? Like, even as Canucks fans, saying, hey, they should just play these games and follow the schedule and not create a competitive disadvantage by having to play on the road. Isn't playing in 50% buildings also part of a competitive disadvantage? Don't you as a Canucks fan want to try to make as much noise in that building as possible? You are being put in situations where you can't maximize the amount of people in the building. That's a competitive disadvantage as well. So to me, kick the can down the road. If you go through all the Canadian teams, there's only a handful of games here in early January. Just give yourself some time here. And they have the luxury of having some mid-February games of spotting some in there. I say you give yourself the chance to try to get these games with 100% capacity, and it's not a huge inconvenience.
The NHL did come out with that update, and the Canucks did send out a statement about 4 hours ago saying if you do have tickets to that game, hold on to your tickets for a rescheduled date. So keep an eye on that, fans. And next, we're going to be joined by, you know him as the play-by-play man here on Sportsnet 650, but he's also apparently a pond hockey legend. Brendan Batchelor joins us now. What's up, Batch?
Not too much. A pretty good day when you can skate on a pond in the lower mainland, so I'm not complaining.
Okay, how was the game, though? Was it competitive? Was it just a skate? Like, break it down for us.
Yeah, it was like a little bit of three-on-three shinny. The ice was a little bit choppy, and, you know, we had to scrape the snow off it, so it wasn't like a high-skill game or anything, but it was a lot of fun, I could tell you that.
Did people ask you to do play-by-play of the three-on-threes across all the rinks there?
No. Luckily, I was able to go somewhat incognito. So,
oh, come on, Batch. You should have volunteered it, man.
He went to CMAC.
That is the benefit of working in radio, right? Is you can go around and nobody really recognizes you. You know, if you're John Shorthouse, then there's people hounding you on the streets wherever you go. But I was able to sort of slide in and out on notice, so it was good.
I did see your post on social media. You did look kind of, you know, you had the jersey on, you had the shades going as well. It was some pretty good costume there, so to speak. All right, let's talk about some, no disrespect to your batch, but let's talk about some actual professional hockey here, not what you did earlier today. Yesterday against the LA Kings, they drop a game. They will a point out of it, but, you know, just, is that a game where it felt like maybe it kind of caught up to them? That fatigue seemed to set in, especially late in that game.
Yeah, I thought so. You know, it was a relatively sloppy game, I thought, from both teams. The Kings didn't look especially great either. And for a Vancouver team that, you know, hadn't played in nearly 2 weeks, and then you're on the second half of a back-to-back on the road where you don't have the last change. And, you know, you're dealing with ongoing COVID issues that forced you to make a lineup change on the day of the game and bring a guy in Matthew Highmore back in off the injured list, although I thought he actually had a pretty good game and was one of the better Canucks. So, I think that's a fair assessment that it was sort of things catching up to them. So now I'm going to be interested to see how they respond tomorrow against Seattle because, you know, A, it's a team they should be beating. It's lower, you know, the Kraken are lower than they are in the standings. So if you want to push back into anything close to a playoff conversation, you got to beat the teams that are below you in the standings, especially within your division. But it's also the first time they've faced, you know, real adversity under Bruce Boudreau. They've lost a game now. And how do they respond to that? Do they come out with an improved effort? Do they get back to some of the things that allowed them to win 7 games in a row? Or do they let some of those bad habits start to creep back into their game? So tomorrow night's game for me is a very important one for this group. Just like the win over Anaheim was really important coming out of the break after being off for so long to come back and get that winning feeling again right away. You know, as you look at what this team has to try and accomplish here the rest of the season to make the playoffs, if they're able to do that, you have to make sure that, you know, you're winning one game here, 2 games there. You can't, you know, get on any sort of extended losing streak, and we'll see if they can nip it in the bud tomorrow.
You know what's still impressive, though, Batch, is, that, look, they played awful for 40 minutes. Truly dreadful hockey for 40 minutes.
Especially that second period.
Yeah, the second period in particular. And then they still got a point. Like, if I'm not saying that's the baseline and they're always going to get points in every single game the rest of the way, but the fact that they were able to hold the door, obviously Yaroslav Halak probably takes most of the credit for that. They still got a point out of last night, and right now this is kind of what they need. Just, hey, survive and advance right now, and getting a point last night to me was still a big deal.
Yeah, I agree. Even the best teams in the NHL don't go 82-0, but it's about managing your losses, and it's about finding a way to make sure you get a point in a scenario where you didn't play your best. So, you know, that's a divisional game where if they had won in regulation, they would have leapfrogged the Kings. So certainly that element of it is disappointing from sort of a micro view of the situation. But you're right. This was not a team that was going to go undefeated under Bruce Boudreau, but the fact that you find a way on a night where you didn't play very well to still gut out a point, whether it was from strong goaltending or whatever you want to credit to, you never apologize for having a good goaltender. But the Canucks need to make sure that they don't put themselves in that situation where they need a performance like they got from Yaro Halak last night, or like they've had from Thatcher Demko in recent weeks, in order for them to win or get points. They've got to, you know, respond and get back to the way they've been playing of late.
There was some discussion before the game of Yaro Halak. Do you go to him? You know, do you continue with Thatcher Demko given the tear that he's on? Yaro Halak was not the problem last night. And I guess that question of confidence, it's, will they give him goal support when he's in the crease right now? It's not about what he can do, because consistently when he's played, and it's been few and far between in terms of games for him, Batch, but the guy's delivered. It's not orthodox. He has his own style. He makes you wonder sometimes, but he's getting the results. It's just not providing him much help these days.
Yeah, you know, there's very little run support for him at all. You know, you look at the 4-3 game they won against Columbus, which is his only win of the season, and that's really the only game where they've scored for him. So, you know, if I'm Yaroslav Halak, I'm frustrated because I think I probably played well enough to have a better record than I do. I probably feel like I deserve more starts than I've got as well if I'm Yaroslav Halak. And it remains to be seen how many games he'll get into. I would imagine once the schedule really heats up down the stretch after what would have been the Olympic break, he's going to have to play a lot. But it is encouraging that the Canucks have two goaltenders that they can rely on to give them, you know, a performance that at least allows the team to have a chance to win the game. We know Demko can do that. He's done that all season long for them. But the fact that Halak, you know, continues to put in strong performances, you know, in the face of a personal adversity for him, in the sense that A, he's not getting the run support, as you alluded to, and B, he's playing so few games and they're few and far between right now. And, you know, with the game being postponed next week, I don't imagine he's going to get into any action until the Canucks head out on that road trip now, you know, in essentially the second half of January by the time that trip starts. So that's a tough thing to do for a goaltender. You know, you can ask anyone that's played goal in the NHL. Hershey will talk about how big of a challenge it is to, you know, go a week or two between games and stay sharp and stay ready. And Yaro Halak has proven that he's able to do that. So that's a positive if they need him for anything more than what they've used him right now, say if there's an injury to Demko or something like that.
It is the People's Show. Randeep Janda, Bick Nizar, joined by Brendan Batchelor. And Brendan, if we talk about, you know, last night's game, it feels like every time Elias Pettersson has a game where he misses some chances, this seems to be a referendum on his play and his future. We talked about it at length at the beginning of the show, but, you know, yesterday's a classic example that he gets into the right spots, but that finish was just lacking there. And you could sense that frustration throughout the night as well, where he's getting to the right spots. It's just that maybe that confidence is just lacking just a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it's a cliche that we hear from players when they're going through slumps, where they'll say, oh, I'm getting the chances, and I would be more worried if I wasn't getting the chances. And I feel that way about Pettersson and the way he's playing. You know, certainly he hasn't gotten to the level that anyone would have expected of him this season, but there are steps that are being taken in the right direction now. And, you know, he doesn't score in the game last night. Obviously, if he puts the puck in the back of the net on one of those chances, it changes the game. And that's where it gets frustrating when a guy that previously has been a game breaker for you isn't, you know, breaking those games wide open for you and scoring key goals when you've been in tight games. And that's been, you know, the story of Pettersson's season overall for the Canucks, because they've been in a ton of one-goal games where they could have used a timely goal from a top player and they haven't got them. But the thing I will say is Pettersson is getting the chances now. He's looking a little bit more confident, certainly not back to the level that we expect of him, and certainly I know that he will expect of himself, but it does feel like it's slowly moving in the right direction. And if he continues to generate the quality of chances that he had last night, it's only a matter of time till he'll start scoring. And scoring, you know, allows you to be confident, which allows you to score more, and you get sort of that positive cycle going where you score, you feel well, you score, you feel well, as opposed to you struggle, you feel bad, you struggle, you feel bad, and that vicious cycle goes in the other direction. It looks like it's slowly turning towards the positive for Pettersson right now.
Everything's kind of stabilized here with the forward lines, and, you know, Brock Besser is still out, and when he returns, you know, we were talking about this earlier, and I said, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Brock kind of replace Podkolzin on that line, and you get Garland, Besser, and Pettersson all together. You know, we're going to have a conversation. We've had this conversation about depth scoring, but right now, to me, it feels like they're getting treated like the third line right now. I'd like to see an injection of talent on that, say, and put Brock Besser there and say, you guys are going to be the scoring line. Go create.
Yeah, I think it's clear right now that Boudreau's tried to spread out his offense, and he clearly has less of a penchant for line juggling than Travis Green did. We saw him tweak things and sit a couple guys down in the second period last night, but that's really the first line juggling he's done, other than when he's been forced into it through injury or COVID protocol or whatever it might be. But I do wonder if in a situation like this where they didn't play that well and he at least started juggling some of those lines, whether he does consider things like that, you know, in the coming days and weeks. It'll depend when they are able to get Besser back. I'm not sure what the news today about the, you know, the quarantine being reduced to 5 days in BC for vaccinated people. I'm not sure whether that means they can get Besser back over the border and back in the lineup more quickly or not. But I tend to agree that, you know, at least I would like to see them go to some combination of their top skilled players together in games when they're trailing and they need a goal. So one thing that Travis Green always did, and criticize him for his line juggling all you want, I know he was very polarizing in that regard, but the one thing I always liked was that if he got away from the lotto line and his team was trailing, he would go back to it because he understood that those three guys playing together were his best chance of getting a goal and getting back into the game. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be that specifically, but you know, I think there is some room for a little bit of flexibility there when you're trailing in games, which luckily for Bruce Boudreau and the Canucks, they haven't had to do a whole lot during the stretch where they're now 7-1 since he took over behind the bench.
Well, both the coach and the interim GM did mention, you know, the depth scoring or lack thereof in the last couple of games. When we talk about, you know, where's the rest of the scoring going to come from, who do you look at most notably? Because, you know, Tanner Pearson might have been a player that we looked at in the past, but if we, you know, he's been able to score in the last four or five games, where else are you expecting more goals to come from? Is it a Nils Höglander or a name that we just mentioned a couple of seconds ago? Is it Vasily Podkolzin?
Well, certainly those guys, you know, they're both young players that are growing. So I don't know if it's fair to put a ton of pressure on them, but at the same time, they're both skilled guys that are being given opportunities to play with skilled players. In the case of Podkolzin, he's playing with Pettersson and Garland. You know, you'd be hard pressed to find two better line mates for him on the team. Höglander's a little bit different because he's kind of playing on that matchup line with Horvat and Dickinson. But at the same time, he's a player that produced offense last season. And, you know, I always say this about players because coaches always say it about players. Once you've shown that you can accomplish something, then the bare minimum of expectation for what you can do or what you should be able to do increases. So the fact that Höglander showed that he can produce offense last season means the expectation is now there that he needs to produce offense. But, you know, we spoke about it already. To me, it all comes back to Elias Pettersson. And I know that Boudreau name-checked Pettersson last night in his post-game media availability as one of the guys that is a top player that's producing. But we know the level that Pettersson is capable of producing at. We know that he hasn't done that yet to this point in the season. And, you know, down the stretch, as you need to win a ton of games to try and get back into the mix, you know, it's going to be those timely goals in one-goal games like last night that are going to make the difference between, you know, whether you get back in the conversation or not. Let's say the Canucks go on a great run. But if you lose a handful of games in overtime and you miss the playoffs by 3 or 4 points, then you're going to look back on those games where, you know, you lose 2-1 last night in Los Angeles. And had you gotten a timely goal from someone like Pettersson, you'd be able to win and you know, maybe make up more ground than certainly you would if you only pick up the 1 point or if you lose in regulation and pick up no points. So, you know, as much as I understand they want scoring from throughout the lineup, they're going to need scoring from throughout the lineup. Elias Pettersson, to me, is still right at the top of that list of guys that need to produce more to help this team win on a nightly basis.
Okay, so you can bet that Elias Pettersson's New Year's resolution will be more goals, more scoring, more 5-on-5 scoring. Batch, are you a resolutions guy? Do you have one?
I haven't really thought about it yet. I usually do, but I'm not good at keeping them. So in 2020, my New Year's resolution was to read 20 books, and I accomplished it like 2 hours before New Year's. Like, I spent all year New Year's Eve reading my last book just so I could get it in. And so then this past year, I said, oh, I'm going to read 21 books this year. But then I became a father, so I've read like 2 books. So that didn't happen. So I'm going to...
Using the baby as an excuse already. Look at you. Just a seasoned father, Batch.
Just wait until you get there, Bick, and then you'll understand. but as a result, and also based on how unpredictable our world is right now, I'm just hoping for a better 2022 for everyone, and that's about it.
Absolutely. Well, Batch, thank you very much. Have a great evening. Happy New Year as well in advance, and have a great call tomorrow. Vancouver Canucks, Seattle Kraken, right here on Sportsnet 650.
Yep, thanks, guys. Happy New Year, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners as well.
There he is. Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play, Sportsnet 650. You hear him every Canucks game right here on Sportsnet 650. And Batch doesn't have a resolution going, but you know, we want to have some fun with resolutions. 650, 650, we're coming with Canucks player resolution. Not ours, because, let's be honest, I'm probably not going to follow through on mine anyways. And nobody really cares.
My go-to resolution for years was come up with a resolution by May. Because, you know, to correct something in your life over a course of a year is difficult. And to live up to it over a course of a year is difficult. So I said, hey, I'll gauge it as the year goes along. And I'll make one in May, and then I can do it for 5 months.
Okay, I got ahead of it this year. And I started doing the gym thing in the fall. So I was like, all right.
There you go. Well done.
I'm thinking about it a little differently, but I do have some resolutions for Canucks players. Why don't I start this off? Dunbar Lumber text line, 650, 650. Come with yours. If you have one for the team, if you have one for a specific player, maybe a coach, maybe Jim Rutherford. I got one for Juho Lamico. It's a weird one to start off on. Weird one. But he's got to have a very simple resolution. Do something notable so Bruce Boudreau knows your name.
Lamica?
Lammy? Lammy? Yeah, that's his name. I was in the room when he asked the media his name that night. It was hilarious, man. So just, Juho, that is your resolution. Do something notable so Bruce Boudreau knows your name.
Isn't he scored a goal under Boudreau. His only goal was against the Kings. It's massive.
That was the 4-0 game, was it not?
Yeah.
Okay. But he still didn't feel like he knew his name. I still think he's got some ways to go. That's mine.
Still hasn't landed, is what you're saying.
Exactly. It was Lammy at that point. Maybe he'll get the Juho at some point.
Lammy. It sounds like a kid's toy or something like that. Lammy.
You got one?
I'm going to go for Elias Pettersson. Again, it's my theme of the day. As far as resolutions, get back to who you are. Do like the Lion King thing and go to the lake and tap the lake and just remember who you are. That's my resolution for Elias Pettersson. Remember who you are.
I'm just picturing Elias Pettersson walking up to False Creek right now and just tapping the water.
Who would Elias Pettersson's Mufasa be? Just like Peter Forsberg appears in the sky and just like, remember who you are.
I'd say Henrik Sedin, but Henrik Sedin's probably like down the street from him. So, but you don't need him to appear in the sky. All right, I got one more. Tyler Myers, New Year's resolution. Trademark the Chaos Giraffe. Lean into it, man.
Yeah.
Make it your brand.
We'll start making some money off of it.
Exactly. Man.
If he showed up to the rink one day with, like, a toque that had ears, like giraffe ears, I'd lose it. I'd just lose it.
Tyler Myers is pretty, you know, straight and narrow. He maybe cracks a couple. Apparently, you know, in the room, he's a very fun guy, a leader and all that. But, like, in the media, just imagine him wearing that hat. His brand would completely change in this market.
It would justify the
$6 million. No, it wouldn't.
He would do, like, the Roberto Luongo thing, right? Just, like, not become a meme, but... You know, show a side of your personality that people will endear themselves to, and before you know it, you'll become a fan favorite.
All right. So maybe he's listening. Maybe he's spending his holidays listening to yours truly and Vic Nizar, the People Show 650, Sportsnet 650. Come with your Canucks players' resolutions. Do you have any for the team? Do you have any for – it could be a serious resolution, but also it could be one we're having some fun with it. Hit us up on the Dunbar Lumber text line. We're coming back with – a little bit more chat on the Vancouver Canucks, of course, and our NFL weekend preview. Keep it here, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to the People's Show with Dan Sat and Randeep.
It is the People's Show for the final time in 2021. Randeep Janda, Bik Nizar, taking you to 7 o'clock here tonight, New Year's Eve. It's a special day. You know, we celebrate what is behind us. We celebrate what's coming as well. Not only in the sports world, but just in society. It's a strange time. We're all dealing with things in our own way. But I think it's important to, you know, celebrate that we've come this far as well. There's been some ups and downs, Bick. And as a community, as a society, the People Show here in, you know, British Columbia, Vancouver, wherever you are across the province, we've been able to kind of navigate it, deal with it together. And that's the key here. It's a strange time in our society. Nobody has witnessed this ever before. We're kind of unique, you know, in recent history anyway. So it's important to have a good community around you. And on the People Show, I know with your show as well, and just having that back and forth, that conversation, that engagement, that relationship with listeners just goes a long way, man.
So, you know, I would maintain that it's not a special day, which is why I'm going to sleep.
You're
going to
go, you're out at like, what, 10:30?
Look, it's game day tomorrow. I want to be well rested for the Kraken Canucks game. Me and Sad on the post game. I want to be well rested for that. But I understand a lot of people get hyped up about New Year's Eve. And so, A, party responsibly this evening. And also, B, as we reflect back on a year, obviously, yes, big shout out to all the Canucks fans, all the listeners, and just general sports fans, not just Canucks fans, that interact with the shows. The support we've gotten from you this year has been phenomenal, like just phenomenal. And you know, you know, people always joke with me. It's like, oh, you work so much. It's like, you know, to be honest, the reason I do is because you guys do such a great job interacting with us, and it's such a joy for us to do this show. And you know, when we race to the studio on Sunday night because Jim Benning and Travis Green have been let go, and we like to do it because you guys take part in it. And so it's been a blast of a year, and hopefully more of it in 2022.
Yeah, whether you're a regular texter listener or somebody texting in for the very first time, we love that engagement. Please keep it coming in 2022 as well. Appreciate the love and the support. And, you know, whether it's hockey or we're going to be talking about, you know, football in a little bit here, is just keep it. Let's keep it entertaining. Let's have fun with it. We're the home of the Canucks. We're going to bring you the news all year long, whether it's in season or off season, but let's have some fun along the way as well. And we were talking about resolutions before we went to break, and Duncan came in with one. My New Year's resolution is to the Canucks taxi squad. They will have to show the resolve and show up when asked. Okay. So next man up policy essentially is what Duncan's asking for. Be more than present. Show up. I like that resolution. That's a realistic one. There was a resolution that was brought up last week in the world of sports. We need to provide an update. Bill Belichick was asked last week about his resolution. Today, that same reporter, folks, asked Belichick again.
New Year's Eve day. Have you had a chance to consider any New Year's resolution since I asked you on Sunday?
Yeah, they would all be personal, so it probably wouldn't mean anything to you anyway. Thank you.
You know the best part about that clip, if you haven't seen it, is that he smirks at the end. It's
the thank you is undefeated there. It's I'm not going to answer your question at all, and I'm going to be pretty snarky about it, but also thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Smirk at the end.
Well, it's that he realized that he basically told her to ask it again later last time, right? So this time we'll just nip it in the bud altogether.
It's personal. Stop asking me questions in a public setting. This is personal. Like, dude, just say you're going to read some books. Like, that's all anyone's asking for.
Or,
oh my goodness.
I want to win more games next year. Like, whatever. Something basic. Yeah. It could be as simple as that. But hey, we're focusing on Belichick here, but props to the reporter. Like, to actually go back at him and say, you said this, I'm going to ask again. Like, a lot of folks would not actually do that in our industry.
No, big shout out, big shout out. Just double down on it.
That's great, man. That's great. Shouts to that reporter. I don't know her name, but she did go back at it, and she did ask Bill Belichick that question. Great clip. And we are now going to do our NFL weekend preview this football season. Make it the Clayton Public House, 188th Street and 56th Avenue in Surrey, theclaytonpub.com. Make sure to hit up the Clayton Pub for all your NFL needs. They've got some great beer selection, and, of course, their menu. Check it out. It is a good one. And, Bick, it feels like, you know, when you look at the schedule this weekend, the marquee game that stands out to me anyways, I know there's a couple that are circled, but Cincinnati, KC, is this the one that you have circled? And when we look at the Bengals and that offense, Is this the moment of truth where they show what their ceiling can be?
Oh, yeah. It's going to be an important one for them. As far as marquee games, I kind of want to single that one out. Clearly, I'm focused on the Jaguars-Patriots this week, man. That's yeah. That's the one that, to me, is I'm the most excited for. No, it's definitely KC and Cincinnati. And, you know, I'm still I'm not ready to jump 2 feet in with the Bengals defense or offense quite yet. Like Joe Burrow, don't get me wrong, but like we're a week removed from them putting up 15 points versus Denver, right? The Ravens had COVID issues. They were basically playing a practice squad. And yeah, you drop 41, it looks fantastic, but they're not that far removed from having a struggling week, albeit in victory. So I'm not ready to declare this team a top 7 offense just yet. It's encouraging or anything like that and everything like that, but this is going to be a very good test for them, and if I had to shade a direction, I'm shading towards Kansas City because the way that defense has been playing for the past 2 months has been very, very impressive, and I think Cincinnati will have their hands full here. It's one of those, you know, for Cincinnati, this is going to be a measuring stick game, and if they live up to it, full credit to them, but like I'm not going to be surprised if they get blown out here this weekend, and then we'll come back on Monday and we'll say, you know what, they're probably a year away from being kind of at that ready to truly knock on the door in the Kansas City level.
Can they win the division? Absolutely they can, right? If you look at what's going on in that division with the Ravens, and they've for a large part of this year they've had a skeleton crew right from the day one, essentially right from camp. They were, you know, behind it in terms of injuries with J.K. Dobbins and their secondary and all of that. The Browns have disappointed. Their ceiling is clearly limited by Baker Mayfield. There's been other issues too, but Baker is, as Sat has documented on the show so much, that there's only so far you can go when your quarterback is A, hurt, but B, there's a real ceiling on what he is and what he thinks he is. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they've got a noodled arm quarterback right now. Like that's who they are. They've had issues on O-line. Defensively, they got some
geriatric
issues
at quarterback. Forget noodle arm.
Yeah, noodle arm was last year. This year, he's something else altogether, right?
He like, man, he doesn't even want to get hit. He's just like, hey, man, just get through these 17 new weeks. No big deal. The ball's coming out quickly. If I have to check down Najee Harris every play, so be it.
But, okay, on that note, though, remember Ben Roethlisberger early on in his career, like when he was so successful, it was – he was getting out of some of those sacks. He was taking hits. It was just like prime Ben Roethlisberger was an absolute machine. He was a beast. He was a tank at quarterback. Yeah, he is way, way, way past that now in terms of what he is. But my point being, the Bengals can win this division, but when you say are they 1 to 2 years away or a year away from being an actual, you know, real threat to be a conference champion. Yeah, that's what I see with this team as well. And the Kansas City Chiefs, to me, are that team that I think they're going to smack them around this weekend. I think this is a big moment for, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs. But when we think about that defense as well, remember we were talking about the red zone defense at the beginning of the year and how it was historically bad. Like, they couldn't get a stop. They couldn't get teams to kick field goals on defense. It was almost every single time a touchdown when a team went into the red zone against the Chiefs, and now they've turned into something else. They've turned into a strong defensive team. That turnaround, that, you know, that ability to actually, within season, make some adjustments, make some schematic changes as well, and be in a position to be actually one of the stronger teams at that side of the ball has been a strong, strong move, and that's why they look dangerous. The offense is one thing, but they don't have a historically bad defense, which is what they were trending towards at the beginning of the year.
It's so interesting, too, because like one player switch can make such a big difference. And putting a guy in, you know, his premier spot. And we know, hey, edge players matter a great deal, right? Every team would love to have a strong edge player. And Chris Jones on that Kansas City defense is, in my opinion, one of the best players in the league on the defensive side of the ball. But they were playing him on the edge for so long. And there's value there, don't get me wrong. But you were getting a good player, not a great player. They acquired Melvin Ingram. They put him on the edge, and they move Chris Jones back in the middle. And everything just kind of clicks into place. You get a premier player back in his premier spot. He's causing all sorts of havoc and dominating again. And suddenly, all these problems in the back seven, I know Daniel Sorensen had to come out, but all these problems in the back seven for the Chiefs suddenly just got cleared up, because now they have Frank Clark coming off an edge. They got Chris Jones through the middle. Melvin Ingram's featuring a little bit. It's not that Melvin Ingram's better than Chris Jones on the edge. It's that Chris Jones now slides into his true position, and he gets to cause some havoc there. It's funny how just like the putting people in places that they're supposed to fit, and suddenly now the pieces all make sense on that defense.
Yeah, that's a scary proposition for anybody else in the AFC as well, because it's not about how you start the season, it's how you finish and how you trend towards the playoffs. Kansas City Chiefs, man, they look scary. We got Silver and Black Canuck coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Homer pick for matchup of the weekend, Raiders versus the Colts. It also has massive playoff implications. I like that text because it's kind of where I want to go next. If you look at the AFC wildcard contenders slash pretenders list, it's a long one. It's a very long one. Both of those teams that Silver and Black Canuck mentions, the Colts and the Raiders are involved in that. You've got the Patriots. My Dolphins are there. The Ravens, even though they're injured, they are still a part of the mix. The Steelers, Browns, and the Chargers as well. If you had to pick a pretender out of that group, because none of the wildcard teams, unlike the NFC, have clinched at this point in time, which one of those is at the top of the table for you? Which one of those is, you know, who's the contender out of that bunch? Because there's a lot of options there, but no one team is really stamped their claim, so to speak, Pick.
I think you just reside to the quarterbacks, right? And if you're looking for the pretender group of that wild card cluster of Indianapolis, New England, Miami, Baltimore, Chargers, Raiders, Steelers, who else has got seven wins? Browns, right? If you just kind of go through it, it's which quarterbacks do you trust? And we already talked about the Steelers. Look, I don't trust Ben Roethlisberger. I don't even want to see the Steelers in the playoffs, so they're out. Baker Mayfield has had his problems this year. I'm kind of out on the Browns and Baker Mayfield. The Ravens, I really like Lamar Jackson, but the health and you know how they've been trending so far this season, they might just run out of time here as far as trying to get back in. And, you know, the Colts to me, like, I've been quietly impressed with Carson Wentz. I know he's a bit of a meme and people don't want to completely buy into it. You know, your first year in this offense, again, I know he obviously played under Frank Reich, but whole different weapons and everything like that. And Jonathan Taylor's been getting a lot of the headlines, and rightfully so. But, you know, Carson Wentz deserves credit for having a 25-6 season TD to interception ratio there. That's good. That's strong. He, you know, turnovers is the thing that's plagued him for so long in Philly, and if he's cleaning that up a bit, that's a strong indication of what this team might be able to do. Now, you know, his status right now as far as the rest of the season here, up in the air, but, you know, I kind of buy into the Colts. Derek Carr, I've never been a big fan. I will admit these past 2 years have probably been his best, but as far as I shade towards the pretenders when it comes to the Raiders than I do the contenders as far as nabbing one of those wild card spots.
Yeah, the way the odds work, there's more pretenders in this list, but, you know, the Colts, I'm with you. I think Jonathan Taylor, been a fan of that defense going back a couple of years, and, you know, they're maybe not as strong as they've been at certain points over the last couple of years, but they still got a strong enough defense. They got playmakers if you can get, you know, Wentz, as long as he's healthy, as long as he's playing, and Jonathan Taylor is a game changer. We've seen that this year. That's why folks are coming with those MVP takes, because he's been that good. So I'm with you on the Colts. Another team that I'd be looking at, and I'm obviously biased in this regard, is I think the next 2 weeks are going to be massive. They're obviously massive for the Miami Dolphins because, you know, they have to prove that they are worthy of the hot streak. The hot streak is nice. You know, winning seven straight, that's a big deal. That's for a team that looked like they were going nowhere to pick up those seven straight wins, to be back in it. That's big for a young team that provides, you know, a semblance of progress or, you know, at least being consistent from year to year. Now, can you beat good teams to stake your claim in the playoff spot is a different story. They got the Titans this weekend, which is going to be a step up. It comes with its own drama with Ryan Tannehill as the opposing quarterback. That's going to be, you know, add another layer of drama. But the most important thing is, can you beat a good team during this streak, during the stretch? And if you can beat them, then you've got a potential showdown against the Patriots, which would be huge for the final week. So I think the Finns, it's going to be tough for them still because that degree of difficulty is ratcheting up. But as we saw, you know, that defense is a difference maker. It's going to come down to Tua. Can he deal with Simmons coming at him? And that O-line is not good. The Dolphins' O-line is not good at all. And we saw Tua sometimes force the issue even against the Saints. In the next couple of weeks against the Titans and the Patriots, how does he cope when the competition and the offensive threat ratchets up a little bit?
You know, I'm kind of looking at this AFC wildcard picture, and if you tried to do, like, pick your wildcard teams or pick your playoff teams just based on entertainment and who you want to see, man, I'm not sure the Dolphins make it for me. I understand.
It's not a sexy matchup, whoever they play.
It's not, is it, right? Like, I'd rather see Justin Herbert in the playoffs than the Miami Dolphins. And I know I'm an unabashed Justin Herbert supporter here. And I do really like Tua, and I still think there's a viable quarterback in there. I'm just not sure it's going to happen behind that offensive line, and Miami constantly flirting with another quarterback. It never feels like it's settled there. But, you know, no part of me really wants to see Miami Dolphins in the playoffs, and they're going to have to punch their own ticket. They've done a great job to get to the stage where destiny's in their hands. They play the Titans, they play the Patriots. They can punch their ticket in, and they find themselves in there with a 10-7 record. Full credit to them, right? You can only beat what's in front of you, and I know they've had to play the Panthers and the Giants and the Jets and the Saints with no quarterback, but whatever. You play what's in front of you, and you pick up your W's as you go along. So if they make it, hats off to them. But, you know, no part of me is excited to watch the Miami Dolphins in the playoffs. I'm sorry, Randy.
If you had to, I'm a Dolphins fan. I watched every minute of that game, yes, that Monday nighter against the Saints. That was a bad watch, man. I was very happy with the result, but that was a bad watch.
Like, okay, here's the thing. Like, with the wild card teams, it's you want an element of will we see an upset? Right, and they're going to have to go up against Kansas City or Tennessee or, you know, strong contenders at the top end of the AFC, Buffalo maybe. Is there any team you think Miami can beat ahead of them in the standings right now?
Man.
Like,
the Bengals on a bad day.
Yeah, I guess that's the only one, but like they're not really slated to play the Bengals right now.
No, they're not. They'd probably be playing the Tennessee Titans or the Colts, depending on how that plays out.
So, yeah, so let's live in a world where, say, hey, Kansas City finishes as the 2 seed or something like that, and the 7 seed's got to play Kansas City. Miami's got no chance. No chance. And that's going to be the game that goes Saturday morning because no one's going to watch, even though it's Patrick Mahomes, and they're just going to say, hey, this one's got no intrigue to it whatsoever. Whereas Herbert versus Mahomes or Herbert versus the Titans and Derrick Henry comes back, that to me is a lot more interesting. I want to watch that game. And I'm rooting for Justin Herbert and the Chargers here to make it the rest of the way over the Dolphins, even though they've had great success here down the stretch.
Yeah, putting my bias aside, I think the rankings for me would be Colts, Chargers, and then I still have a soft spot for the Ravens. I think, you know, if they can get healthy the Patriots defense, and they win in the trenches, but I don't know, man. I really think that team has a ceiling, though, right? Because of if they're going to be running into dynamic teams, and you might be able to win in the trenches, but if you run into a team that can shoot out the lights a little bit and can beat that defense, you got a ceiling because Mac Jones is not going to air it out. So, you know, for the same reason, I think there's a ceiling on the Finns because there's a question with that young quarterback. I think, to me, the Patriots have a ceiling as well. So I'd actually go Ravens ahead of Patriots.
Ah, oh, man, it's just the Ravens have been so Jekyll and Hyde. Like I'm a fan of the Ravens. You know, institutional success. They always try to win in the margins, the hidden margins that no one tries to focus on. So I do like that franchise, but this year has been just such a tire fire. Even if they back in or get in, I'm just not sure they've had enough consistency to. It's the same question for the wildcard teams. I want wildcard teams that can potentially provide a surprise. I feel like the Colts can. I feel like the Patriots can because they have the edge in coaching versus everyone. And I kind of feel like the Chargers could just because it's Justin Herbert could go nuclear on a Sunday and just say, hey, I'm going to drop 450 and 4 touchdowns. Deal with it. And if you can keep up with me, great. But I don't necessarily look at the Ravens or the Dolphins as potential upset teams. The Dolphins, we talked about their ceiling. The Ravens, to me, just they've had so much upheaval for going on, what, 2-3 months now, basically the whole season. They've hardly had a chance to have a consistent team week to week. And so I kind of just look at them, I think, unfortunate year, come back next year stronger than ever.
Yeah, normally one of the best coach teams in the NFL, even this year, but they've just had to deal with so much stuff. All right, in the NFC, this is a much shorter conversation because, really, looking at those wild card spots, the Cards already have clinched a playoff spot, you know, so...
It's so gross. It's so gross on the NFC.
It's the Niners and the Eagles, Vic. Like, that's...
Like, Eagles are going to the playoffs? Are you kidding me, man? I genuinely would rather see the Falcons.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be honest. You know, when you're looking at viewing, Sunday games and you're looking at who's playing who, the Eagles are probably one of my least favorite teams to watch right now. Like, if there's a ranking of all the teams, I would say Eagles are probably like bottom three or four. So, yeah, and I don't want to see them in the playoffs.
Jalen Hurts has been impressive. I know he gets a lot of flack, and I'm still not sure he's a true blue quarterback. It's, you know, you win in a certain style with him, and that's all well and good. Hey, man, like, pick up your W's when you can find them. But I don't know. I have a hard time buying into this Eagles team. They win on the offensive line. They're good on the defensive line. But everywhere else, I'm just kind of like, sure. Like, Devonta Smith is fun, but the rest of that, those pass catchers on those teams almost feel like they fight the ball in the air and it just winds up going the other way. I think I'd rather the Vikings make it. I think I'd rather the Falcons make it. And to be honest, the Saints, if they can just get reasonable quarterback play, that defense is so good. I wouldn't mind seeing them make it, too.
Yeah, they just look frustrated on Monday, though. Alvin Kamara looked like he didn't want to play at certain points of that. So I think that whole situation's kind of wearing thin. We got Dell and Suri coming in with, the Cowboys have had a very easy schedule. I want to see if they can beat the Cards on Sunday and the Eagles next week. And that's a valid statement. I've been impressed by the Cowboys in terms of what they're able to do. But have they beaten real teams of substance this season? I don't think so. So, you know, they've got a great offense, don't get me wrong, but I just want to see them beat a really good team, and they haven't done that this year.
For sure. And, you know, we were talking about marquee games this week. Obviously, the Chiefs-Bengals one takes it for me, but because there's no stakes in this game, Dallas has won the division, Cards have punched their ticket. If there was some mystique to this one and someone was still clinging to their playoff life or something, I would say this is the most intriguing matchup this week. Now, they're playing for just playoff seeding, which is still very important, obviously, and Arizona playing for the division as well, trying to get back into the NFC West. But I think this is going to be a really exciting game, and the way Arizona has completely fallen off should not go unnoticed. They started out so hot, but I almost wonder if the secret's out on them. And I kind of think Dallas is going to be able to beat up on them here.
Yeah, final 2 weekends to go for football, and it's getting really intriguing. There's a lot of teams that are jockeying for draft position. Another group of teams are jockeying for playoff position. We'll see how it works out. Get a PC MasterCard credit card by December 31st and earn a 100,000 PC Optimum points offer. Conditions apply. Visit pcfinancial.ca for details. We'll be coming back with a replay of the Jim Rutherford conversation from Halford and Brough this morning. So make sure, if you missed that this morning, make sure you're listening to The People Show, because Rutherford is coming up next on Sportsnet 650.